A62. Number 26A.
Yes. We are at the point of the laws of spirit, and I was asked to explain again the term animal in animal magnetism. I said that, for instance, in the German, you have two different terms for animal, which makes it very easy to distinguish, though, unfortunately, those who have translated the textbook in German have chosen the wrong one. Animal has two connotations. Animal, in a way, is beastly. Animal nature, we may call a beastly nature, and therefore is different than human nature. Some say that beastly nature is worse than human nature, and others say it's the other way around. But both, again, can be compared with divine nature, so that we have animal nature, human nature, spiritual nature. And this is a gradation of qualities, and that is the animal in one category that we could call beastly, just to make it a bit more distinguishable. On the other hand, we have natural science. And in natural science, we find many different fields of natural science. One natural science is concerned with inanimate nature, with physical nature, that which doesn't live, like matter, atoms, and so on. But natural science is also interested in the whole field of plants, of trees, plants, flowers, what you call that? Biology, botany, huh? It's botany. It's another kind of nature. Besides that botany, we have birds. That's another science, whatever you call it. Or birds. Birds, huh? Ornithology, yes? Then you have another field which concerns animals, don't you? That's animals. Then we have a field of people, anthropology. We have various fields. That's another classification. Now, the classification that has relevance to our subject is the following, that in a big way you can classify natural science and the realm of classifiers in another way, in inorganic matter and organic matter. Inorganic matter is that kind of matter which has no life in itself, which doesn't seem to have life in it. And organic matter seems to have some kind of life in it, has therefore in it an animated sense, and is therefore much more under influence from outside. If I take a hammer and beat on a piece of iron, it doesn't really have any impact. But if I do the same thing with organic matter, I destroy it. I influence it. I destroy it. Therefore, what Mesmer has seen is that the influence between inorganic matter is practically nil, except perhaps for a magnet. The magnet can somehow influence other minerals. It can attract iron. But he has seen that there is another influence that is exercised between organic matter, and that is of an animated nature, and that he called animal magnetism in comparison to the ordinary metal magnetism of a magnet. So animal magnetism has nothing to do with animals. Animal magnetism, therefore, is a classification that applies to human people just as it applies to animals, because both have the same organic body, animated matter. Yes? So animal magnetism is that magnetism which has an impact or an influence on animated bodies, on animated matter, mostly on people, because people have an animal organism. Yes? That's how you have to explain it. So perhaps the easiest way to distinguish is between animal and beastly. That's the distinction. Animal magnetism has nothing to do with beastly, but is the phenomena that animated bodies, whatever those bodies are, mostly people, are under the influence of an outside force, no matter what that outside force is, if it is the moon, or if it is other people's thought, or whatever it is. Actually, the very first thing he has seen is that people are under the influence of the moon. And today that is more or less accepted, that the moon has a kind of influence on the health of people, on the disposition of people, if they get a bit moonstruck or not. Usually those who are apt to drink, they usually begin to drink more when it is full moon. They have a greater drive towards drinking and things like that. So that's animal magnetism. It's not beastly magnetism. Yeah? Okay.
If you don't know this, the natives down in the tropics have a very, very rigid law about things they can plant and things they can do just before and after the moon comes up and down. I can't make my garden or plant something just before the moon goes down. It's just a waste of time. No good.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how in that case, but it is proven that the growth of plants is different on the full moon than on the, what is the other one? No moon? Empty moon? No moon? New moon. New moon, yeah. That is proven. Why not? Because the tides that we witness along the shore are also influenced by the moon. So why should not the body be influenced by the moon? Just as the body is influenced by the weather. That's another kind of animal magnetism. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but, somehow there seems to be a difference between whether we are influenced by moon or by physical forces or by people.
Sure, sure. That's why then he had, you see, that Mesmer first saw that there is an influence of the stars. That's what he sees for his PhD, that he was seeing that from the medical point of view, the stars and the moon, especially the moon, had an influence, and then found out that there exists another influence, namely the influence of one body to the other body, that his influence by laying hands on the body would do the same thing as a magnet, and therefore he began to see that animal nature has a reciprocal influence to each other. So he dropped the magnets, the iron magnet or whatever it was, yes, and practice on that influence from one human body to the other human body.
Thank you. That certainly illustrates again the danger of using a term when you don't specifically know exactly what the term means.
Well, that's it, huh? Yeah.
QED.
Yeah. Yes.
You see, I thought that we really, with animal magnetism, we would deal with psychic forces. Which
yes.
Which has really to do with thinking forces.
Yes, yes.
Now, yeah. Would you also put this into the category of animal magnetism?
Well, the problem, therefore, was, you see, that the theory of Mesmer was not right. The hypothesis of Mesmer was not right. That it was actually not a force that he exercised upon the body of the sick. You see, he believed that. That's why it's called animal magnetism. But then afterwards, you see, 100 years afterwards, one found out, that's why I like that history, you must read that history, that they found out that it is the patient's belief in it that changed the body. You see? So it was then the patient's belief that has an impact on the animal nature of body, of the animal nature of the human body, which was again animal magnetism, but that's why they changed the name. So they found out that animal magnetism, as the way he explained it, did not exist at all, but that it was a false interpretation of psychic influence. Yes? It took about 100 years to find that out. Yeah.
So we see another phase of this in our own self-consciousness here, when we're all very timid about volunteering to give you the illustration.
Yeah.
Self-consciousness.
Of course.
We influence ourselves.
Yes. But don't say I malpracticed you. Not to give an answer.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we have another 3/4 of an hour. And we can't take all those laws, but I think we take another law which is always very practical for each one, which I would take, say, the law of principle. On page 151, Well, I feel that perhaps this law is of great value to each student, where we can see that the divine principle practice us as idea, as the demonstration of the maximum of good. Do you see what we see here? Animal magnetism says, I'm a principle, and that principle always exercises evil. That's the nature of animal magnetism. That's why we have to handle animal magnetism, because it says, I, animal magnetism, am a self-operative principle, and therefore I demonstrate myself, I practice myself by bringing out always the maximum of evil. Remember how Mrs. Eddy, in that period of, in that passage on principle, she first had said that the maximum of good is opposed by the maximum of evil, that she changed then that in order to make evil unreal, and began to see that the maximum of good is just God and His idea, the all in all. So that she gave in the last edition really the law of practice from the point of view of principle, showing that whatever is going on from everlasting to everlasting, it is principle practicing itself by bringing out the true ideas, which naturally would free us from trying to practice the principle of being, which is metaphysical. As long as we see that we have to practice the divine principle, we lower our standard to argumentation, to metaphysics. Whereas if we see that the only thing that is ever going on is the divine principle, the ever-operative principle, always bringing out the highest idea in every situation, then really we have found a terrific law of practice. So here we have that law, divine principle practices us as idea. And so we can go right through the seven synonymous term and see what does it mean if principle practices us as idea. Therefore, as idea of mind, and as idea of spirit, and as idea of soul, principle, life, truth, and love. That's the practice of principle. And it's actually our practice. So, shall we not look down, but look up to me? I'm also quite nice. You don't have to look always into the books, huh? Just try once to figure out. I would have a nice tie and so on. And think out what it means that that the divine principle practices me, everyone, everything, as the infinite idea of mind. What could we see? What it would practice. So the divine principle practices me as what? The idea of mind.
An number of intelligent activity.
For instance, as the maximum of intelligent activity, further?
Creative ability.
As infinitely creative ability. Yes, further, without looking down.
Lawfulness of mind.
You see? So, isn't it really wonderful to think that all the practice that is ever going on right now with me, with everybody, in the whole universe, is that the divine principle is practicing itself as the idea of lawfulness, of law-abidingness, of active intelligence as the power of everything. It is constantly practicing what? The basis of my being, yes.
Guiding,
yes. You see,
direction.
Directing me. Isn't that nice? Think of the trouble we have all the time with metaphysical approach. That we say, oh, I wish I would be guided. What shall I do to see that I'm guided rightly, that I'm led rightly? Whereas if we could see, I don't know really what true guidance is. I don't even know when I'm guided rightly. How can I know that I'm guided rightly, humanly? But I can see, the divine principle has his own mind. Therefore, the divine principle, ever operative, is practicing his own mind. The divine principle is practicing his own mind. Therefore, his own conceptions, therefore his own ideas. In order to practice his own ideas, the divine principle itself is guiding every idea, is guiding my thought, is guiding my intentions, is guiding my desires, is leading my thoughts, is leading every step, is leading my activities, is guiding my activities, my will, my desire. Can you hear? Now, it's not that we have to think out what is true guidance, but now we see the divine principle has a mind. And therefore, through that mind is really bringing into operation the true idea, the true purpose. As we go on, you see, through the seven, we really feel that we are under the practice of principle, instead under the practice of a practitioner, or under the practice of us, that we practice on us. So that self-practice becomes actually obsolete, even that, and we lift it right up and back into the divine principle. And can you see the peace you get, the confidence you get when you suddenly see, I don't have to think constantly what is right and wrong. The only thing I have to see is that principle has a mind. Therefore, principle has its own conception of what it wants to attain. And that principle is self-operative. It's self-practicing. I don't have to make it work. And so I can sit back, you see, and really rest in that terrific practice. I like to do that all the time and think, all right, I don't know where I have to go. I don't know what I have to demonstrate. How can I know what I have to demonstrate? Who tells me what is right to demonstrate? I don't know. I'm not God. But there is a divine principle in being. And so the divine principle in being says in mind, I practice you as the infinite idea conceived in mind. For seeing in mind, for telling in mind, for seeing in mind, I said that. See, then I can go to spirit and can see that principle practices me as the infinite unfoldment of spirit. It practices me in bringing me and channelizing me into the order of spirit, into the order development of spirit. That divine principle practices me in spirit by taking away from me what does not belong to me, taking away from every situation what does not belong to that situation, taking away that which is not real from me. I know principle does it. See? Can you see that from the point of view of science? So you can go on and see that the divine principle as soul is actually practicing itself on me by constantly showing me my true identity, by offering to me my true identity, constantly practicing on me by overturning and overturning what needs to be overturned. That divine principle is all its terrific power of principle, you know, just comes and overturns in soul whatever has to be overturned. And I can see it in principle, that principle practices on me by touching every part of my system, by bringing light to every part of the divine system, by bringing true activity and power and true chemicals to every part of my system, so that it touches the smallest detail of my bodily system, so that I can take in every system. That principle practices not only the spiritual system, but also the mental system, also the psychological system, also the bodily system, practices everything. So I don't have to practice on my body. And as life, you can see that the divine principle practices really on me by practicing the spontaneity of life, by practicing constantly my individuality, my true individuality. It never brings into operation my wrong individuality, never. Therefore I can rest and be assured of the practice of divine principle, because I know it's going to bring out in me that which is exalted, that which is risen above the mortal concept. It practices in me the ability to lay down the mortal, to give me the strength to lay down the mortal, so that it is not a burden, not an effort, but something that can be done easily. My burden is light, my cross is light. That's why, because principle is life. Or you come to truth and you see that that principle is constantly practicing its right idea, never letting an erroneous concept operate in me or practice something in me. I just feel that that divine principle is just always practicing the Christ consciousness in me, the highest ideal of my health in me. Or as love, you can see, I have to be now very quick, that the divine principle practices on me really the fulfillment of love. Therefore the blessedness of love, the glory of love, the grace of love, all that is being practiced on me. And I feel under that terrific flood of blessing in love. Yes. Okay.